This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the SportsMap Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage. When you need certainty in the home buying process with a loan that fits your life, Rocket can.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us. Hour number two. Good Friday to you. Set up for the weekend. Joey Kaufman's going to join us at 40 past the hour. That's coming up in about 35 minutes from the Columbus Dispatch. And we're going to talk about Ohio State. Right now, big game coming up against Michigan State this week. And, of course, the Michigan showdown's always big. It's one of my favorite rivalries. But remember at the beginning of the season, they lost to Oregon, and you were wondering, like, oh, can an Ohio State team afford a loss to Oregon at the beginning of the season? But apparently they can. They're right now in the top four, according to the College Football Playoff Committee, and they're playing very, very good football right now. Big Ten is up a little bit with some of its teams, but Ohio State seems to be in control. But we'll figure out where that season went wrong a little bit at the beginning and where that went right down the stretch, and we'll talk about that coming up. We've also got the good, the bad, and the dumb coming up, so you don't want to miss that. But we get this time of year in college football. Next weekend is a little bit more exciting because it's rivalry weekend. You know, Alabama-Auburn. You've got all the rivalries in college football. Michigan-Ohio State. Florida-Florida State. You got the Apple Cup. You got them all, right? Clemson-South Carolina. You got them all. But this weekend is where, if you're looking for some chaos a little bit, right, to sort of see where everything is shaking up, this might be where you get it. But don't hold your breath. Right, there's some good matchups coming up. I mean, Michigan State certainly can make this a little bit more interesting. But a game I want you to pay attention to tonight, if you're into this whole college football thing, is what's going to happen this evening in Houston. The Cougars are ranked 24th, and they're 9-1 on the season. They are unbeaten in the AAC. Now tonight they'll face Memphis. Not much of a challenge. Memphis is not bad. Seth Hennigan is their quarterback. He's got 21 touchdowns this year. He's playing pretty well. But they're not a threat for Houston if Houston plays right. Where you want to see tonight is how good Houston is. Because when they match up with Cincinnati in the AAC championship game, that may be the game that if Houston is looking great, looking wonderful, everybody likes the way they're playing, if Cincinnati wins that game convincingly against them, then Cincinnati is going to raise their hand up with an unbeaten record and say, now we're serious. Don't give us some New Year's bowl. We want to be in the party. And if the committee continues to look around for one-loss teams they like better than that, tonight's Houston-Memphis game, if you notice how good Houston is playing, wait till they play Cincinnati, and then we might have something to talk about later.
Wake Up Call continues now on the SportsMap Radio Network.
Time for the good.
That's really nice.
The bad.
That's the bad guy.
And the dumb.
What an idiot. Oh, what a loser.
All right, good, the bad, and the dumb time here on your Friday. We're going to send you into the weekend, good, bad, and dumb. I don't know. There was the only way I could probably promote that. But here is the good of the day, Ron Culver.
Well, I mean, anyone's weekend can be good, bad, and dumb.
Right.
You can have all three. We just hope it's the first one. But sending you into this weekend. Now, you may not be into this. I am. I think this will be a lot of fun. But Martin Scorsese's next film. You ready for this?
Yes.
I got, you know what? Let me throw a little mood music in here as well. There we go. His next film is going to be a biopic on the Grateful Dead.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Starring Jonah Hill as frontman Jerry Garcia.
Oh, no kidding. Jonah Hill is going to be Jerry Garcia?
Yeah.
And you know, the more I think about it,
I think it works.
It kind of works. I agree with you. I think I'm processing it in my head, and I'm picturing Jonah Hill. Yeah, it works. By the guys in Hollywood, that's pretty brilliant. I never would have pegged that. If you had given me the casting director job for that out of nowhere, and they said, "All right, you know, you've never done a casting before, but start thinking of actors you think would be Jerry Garcia." I'd be like, Tom Cruise? No. I mean,
Brad
I need somebody
Pitt.
Kind of looks Brad Pitt. No. I think you're missing the point. We need somebody kind of Okay, I'll get back to you, I guess.
The casting crew for Bohemian Rhapsody. Have you seen the Queen biopic? Whoever thought Rami Malek for Freddie Mercury was an absolute genius. Which, by the way, I'm not saying Jonah Hill is going to win the Oscar, but I don't know. I mean, it's Martin Scorsese, Jonah Hill. It's a winning combo, I think.
Hey, man, it's good stuff.
Yeah,
That's great.
I don't know. I'm kind of curious where they're going to go with this.
Well, before we get into that, are you a Deadhead or are you?
I'm not a full Deadhead. I do like their music. I do respect the tradition that they have laid out.
Yeah,
you know, where, you know, people, you know, it's just people just travel around just watching their shows and that these guys still tour, even despite the fact that Jerry Garcia, died in 95?
Yeah, in the 90s,
you know?
Yeah.
Or something like that. I mean, he's been dead for a long time. They're still on tour.
I think 95. I think I remember what station I was at when.
Yeah.
And they did a tribute to him. I mean, they just played everything under the sun in tribute to him. So I think it was in the mid-90s, yeah. I'm with you. I'm not a Grateful Dead fan. I got to be honest with you. I probably would not have bought a ticket to their show back in the day.
Yeah.
I was young anyway, but you know, I was
I might have if, you know, if a bunch of friends of mine were like, "Hey, you got to come to the show. Come to the show. Yeah. It's going to be fun." And then yeah. I probably would get into it.
And I could never even begin to talk about which album was great.
Yeah.
And man, it seemed like Jerry was off his game in the 68 class. I just don't I don't know.
But it does pique my curiosity because, you know, I mean, we all know how the Grateful Dead started. It was during the psychedelic 60s out of San Francisco.
Right.
I'm curious. I mean, is it going to be like an origin story for them? Is it kind of going to be done like the same way Queen was done? Because I really enjoyed the way Queen was done.
I enjoyed that movie.
Bohemian Rhapsody.
I enjoyed Bohemian Rhapsody
which,
a lot.
By the
now,
way,
I have not seen Rocket Man.
I haven't seen Rocket Man either.
That young man apparently did a good job playing Elton John.
Yeah.
I forget which his name was.
But now, I do have to bring this up since I mentioned Bohemian Rhapsody. I did not know this the first couple of times I viewed it, but the bass player who in the actor who played the bass player in Queen,
uh-huh.
You know what movie he was in?
No.
Yeah, see, you're going to have to watch it again. He was, I think it was Timmy in Jurassic Park.
Was he really?
Yeah.
Really?
Blew
the kid
my
who got
mind.
The kid who got electrocuted.
Grew up to be the bass player in Queen in Bohemian Rhapsody.
Oh, that's awesome. That is, I definitely will have to at least see clips of that on YouTube.
Just to see it.
I didn't know what happened to them.
No.
I know
now
the
you
young
know.
Girl grew up and became an artist, and she's a very successful artist.
Yeah.
But you know now.
But
she's
he is, 40. Yeah, he's still acting.
That's great. Good for him, man. Great for him. All right, what's the bad of the day?
The bad of the day. It's not really the bad of the day. It's just you know the way I'm going to spin this. It was a wild finish for an English Premier League. Not Premier League, Championship League game. And actually, it was for an FA Cup, which is a season long tournament. Which I wish America would do a season long tournament during the season.
Hey, would that be fun?
It would be so much fun. But it was between Stockport County and Bolton Wanderers. And the reason why I'm saying this is because I think – the reason why this is bad is because I think they just wanted to copy us.
You think so?
Yes. Okay, if we can think back to last Saturday, Baylor, Oklahoma.
Right.
Baylor's kicks a – or no, that Baylor doesn't kick a field goal. They stop the ball, I think. Is that how the game ended? Then the fans rushed the field, and they had to get all the fans off the field.
Oh, yeah. That's
and then,
right.
And then Baylor just ended up kicking a field goal just to end the game. But,
right.
You know, the fans had rushed the field, and there were still 3 seconds left.
Right.
Same thing happened here. That's why I think they're just copying us. Before the game ended, fans rushed the field to celebrate Stockton Port's come-from-behind victory because they were down by 2 goals within the first 8 minutes of the game, and they ended up winning the game 5-3. But it was on their 5th goal to seal the deal. Fans rushed the field. Not only did they rush the field, the player who scored the 5th goal had his jersey stolen, and the corner flag went missing.
Oh, really?
Now, oh I don't know what they ended up. They ended up getting the corner flag back. But is that something that you could smuggle out of a stadium?
I don't think so. I got to tell you, I don't think so.
It's not something you can hide in your shorts, right?
No, I don't think so. Oh, that's wild.
And see, I'm trying to keep it light because the real bad of the day I don't feel like discussing.
Okay. Do you want a hint of what it is?
Zach Stacy.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
I don't really feel like getting into it.
It's fine. Yeah.
That's why I wanted to have a little fun. It's Friday. Fun Friday.
Yeah, fun Friday. All right, let's get the dumb of
the day. The dumb of the day is to the Big 12 and to the Texas Tech radio crew.
Yeah, they got reprimanded for criticizing officials. Tell us the story.
They're officially suspended for calling the game this week, right? So apparently this officiating crew, or not the radio crew, like any radio crew across the country, had issues with the officiating crew, right? So they had some disparaging things. I'm just going to play you a quick little 20-second clip.
I'll say it right now. The Big 12 does not want Iowa State to lose this game.
Yeah, Bob Bowlesby, you need to answer to this. This is ridiculous.
I've seen some horrendous calls today.
This is ridiculous. Unbelievable. The inconsistency of this referee crew in favor of Iowa State today. Unbelievable.
Yeah, that's remarkable.
So that alone, I don't think would be enough to get you suspended, right?
Well, I'm gonna say this, and
Well, no, because they went further.
Ahead,
that's why.
Then I'll go.
That, I mean, you know, yes, they are there to call the game. I kind of feel local radio can have an opinion, you know, because the people listening to them are Texas Tech Red Raider fans.
Right. You are a home team.
Yeah.
Dominant.
They're not.
Broadcast.
They're not impartial. They're not going, oh my God, to a to an Iowa State touchdown or anything like that. You know, they will show their disappointment. If they, at the end of the game Iowa State won by a field goal, they would be like, oh, there's the field goal, and you know they would. You would hear their emotions. I think the reason why they got suspended, and I'm not going to play that part because it's too long, they decided to name off every member of the officiating crew.
Yeah, that was terrible. That is unacceptable.
And I think that's where the dumb comes in. I think it's dumb that, you know, the Big 12 is, you know, their feelings are getting hurt by this so much. You know, first it's, you know, can't do horns down, and now you can't do this. You know, it's, you know, the Big 12, I don't know what rules they're trying to impose or why they're trying to be, you know, the dad to everything. I mean, I know that's their kind of their job, but, you know, some things you just got to let go. But I think the officiating crew took it a step too far. I mean, the next step after that, after naming people, was like, and here's their address just in case you want to go and visit them.
Yeah, that's a problem. You can't do that. And look, I think you're right. I think the Big 12 is like, look, I get it. People have always had problems with officiating. That's going to be the way it's going to be for the rest of our existence.
Yeah, until we have robot refs on the field.
All the time.
Then we're going to have issues with robots.
That's part of the deal. The one thing that you want to avoid, though, and I think this is where they're right, is saying, guys, look, there's no conspiracy here, and don't start implying that there is one. Right? We really, for the sake of the sport, we can't have you guys saying that we're manipulating games.
Yeah. That we want Iowa State to win.
Yeah, we can't do that. Like, we're not doing that. There is never, when anybody tells me that conferences are manipulating games and doing all this stuff, there's never any evidence to support that. There's never a smoking gun email. And I always tell people, I know it's fun. I know it's fun. I never want to take your conspiracy fun away from you. But do you realize what you have to do to make that a reality? The amount of people that have to be involved in that, and the amount of people that are willing to keep quiet because of that, right? That's the problem, is you are talking about a sort of a get down. So these announcers just blowing this off and going, yeah, this isn't just bad officiating. No. There's a deep, Red Raider fan, there's a deeper conspiracy that's out there for you to marinate on.
Yes.
It's not that we're getting screwed. It is that we're being screwed on purpose, that the powers that be are coming down on us. That, if you're a conference, you cannot let happen. And since these broadcasters technically work for the school and who were or part of the conferences, that's where they can get suspended. But you're right. I hate that your emotion would get to you as a professional broadcaster, that you would say that. You would give out those kind of names. I get it. You get the names for the broadcast, and you will sometimes do that in the broadcast. I've done that myself. Well, I'll say, our officials tonight are Jerry Mitchell, Bob Evans, and Mark Smith, and they've got the ball at center court, and we're ready to go here. You know, you do that as part of a natural broadcast, but they did it in a way of saying,
yeah, I mean, it's one thing
guys,
to say,
remember these names because we're really ticked off.
Yeah, it's one thing to say it at the beginning of the game.
Right. Nobody remembers. Nobody's going to remember who that is.
Yeah, no one's going to remember. And no one's going to think to go back. Let me rewind the tape and go back because, you know, no one's doing that anyways. But to say, like, and listen, I'm going to name off these names. Grab a pencil and paper. Write these names down.
Right.
You know, I mean, they're just short of just saying all those things. I mean, that's where I think it was really dumb of them. And, like, you know, because, I mean, we know local radio, Homer radio, school radio, they're going to be impartial.
Exactly.
They're going to have opinions. And, yeah, you know, you're going to complain about officiating. I mean, I think it's the statement of, you know, these officials really want Iowa State to win. Like you said, you know, you can't create a controversy that's not there.
Yeah. I mean, it's the natural thing of broadcasters. I get it. You get angry.
Yeah.
But there is a moment where you have to be professional and you have to think about the ramifications of what you're doing.
Yeah.
You're sending red meat to a fan base that are going to be lunatics. And then you are giving them fodder for them to take that extra step want them to take.
That's why everyone's pointing their finger at the Big 12, just like everyone points their finger at the NCAA. But I think there's, these guys had a hand in it, too. And that's why that's the dumb of the day. Both of these guys, both the parties are dumb.
All right. That's the good, the bad, and the dumb for your Friday. Again, we're going to talk Ohio State coming up just about 15 minutes from now as we continue. It's Wake Up Call on Sports Map Radio.
This is Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Hey, are your wiper blades chattering, skipping, or squeaking? Don't compromise your visibility with streaks or smearing on your windows. When it's time to replace your wiper blades, stop by O'Reilly Auto Parts. The professional parts people will help you navigate their wide selection to find just the right wiper blades for your vehicle. O'Reilly Auto Parts will even install your wiper blades free of charge. See better, drive safer with new wiper blades at O'Reilly Auto Parts. O'Reilly Auto Parts, better parts, better prices every day. I know it's not Throwback Friday, but today is the anniversary of the Malice in the Palace.
Yes, it is.
2004.
Yep.
Ron Artest and
I can't believe
O'Neal.
This is the part, I think I do this all the time too. 2004 does not seem like that long ago.
No, it does not.
Until you go, 17 years ago.
That's right. It is it's probably one of the darkest NBA days in the history of the
I would
the
think so, yeah.
You had a player running into the stands to attack a fan. And then all hell broke loose. And man, remember how angry David Stern was when he was issuing those suspensions?
Yes.
I thought David Stern was going to go, and for Ron Artest, we're going to murder him in front of the public. He was so angry at everything about that. He was furious. I mean, furious. If he could have suspended them for life, he would have. But, of course, the union was going to step in on that. He wanted blood for that. It was nasty. But there's a documentary on Netflix about that really kind of dives into it. Jermaine O'Neal was the one that really, really got hurt. Ron Artest left the Pacers team and went on to play for the Lakers, ended up winning a championship. And he left when the Pacers were a team. Reggie Miller talked about this in the documentary. They were getting so close, right, at that time to being a championship team. They were really starting to come together. And Ron Artest leaving, because he was such a great defender, a great defensive player, really sort of just sort of ruined what they were building in Indiana. But
do you want the soundbite from the game?
Yeah, let's do that. Let's do that.
The Pacers have played a very intelligent game tonight. Ben Wallace is fouled, and Wallace right at Artest. This has potential to be serious if they don't get between. Wallace upset. Players trying to hold each other off. Steven Jackson and Rasheed Wallace trying to be peacemakers. Now Jackson yelling. Wallace still going. You need the coaches in there to get him away. Jackson challenging Derek Coleman. Somebody should just get Jackson out of
quickly as possible.
The problem is, if Wallace is ejected, I'm not sure, he'd have to walk past the Pacer bench to go. Now Artest has jumped over the scorer's table and is trying to get down to the bench. Artest is in the stands.
Yeah, and here was the thing. Remember Ron Artest? Remember when there was the fight on the floor between the teams?
Yeah, that's what started it.
That was what started it, right? Rasheed Wallace, right? That was what started it. Artest went to the scorer's table to lay down, right? He was laying down, and that's when he got hit with the cup. Now, one of the things that Artest had said in the documentary was he was an angry young player growing up, and he really wanted to handle his anger management. So he had gotten some advice that in certain situations to go cool off, like go to a place where you can concentrate on cooling off. Like before you explode, go to a place where you can get your mind ready. The problem is the optics didn't look good. Right. He just went to the scorer's bench and laid down. And that seemed almost like kind of in your face to some of the Detroit Pistons players at the time. They didn't really like that look. And anyway, it was all a mess. And then when he got hit with the cup, he went out of that sort of peaceful space to the more angry space. And that's where he went after, I think, a Michael Ryan was the guy's name that was throwing the cup. There was another guy named Green that was in there as well. But yeah, this was a real, real problem because we don't normally see that. Look, we see, you know, we can see fights on the field, and some fights have been brutal, right? I mean, you go back into the 70s when, Rudy Tomjanovich got punched in the face by Kermit Washington. That almost killed him. I almost killed Rudy Tomjanovich. And NBA players taking swings at, like, average fans, like average size fans. I mean, you're talking, you could, there was one slow motion video of one of the fans slipping as I think Jermaine O'Neal was throwing a punch. That if he landed it, he would have crushed that guy's head like a tomato. Right? These NBA guys are no joke.
Oh,
they've got size
huge.
And they've got torque.
Yeah.
Right? And so,
plus, I mean, they're athletes.
They're athletes.
No matter how athletic, how many times you hit the gym, they're still in better shape than you.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's incredible. And so, yeah, and so you can only imagine what would have happened if you know, if a punch had landed on the wrong spot to a player and a player, you know, a fan had gotten killed or something or really seriously. I'll tell you a real quick story about the Tomjanovich. So Tomjanovich, this is how bad he got punched by Kermit Washington. So Tomjanovich got hit square in the face and it was devastating. It was like go get the ambulance, devastating. Tomjanovich was in the ambulance, right? And he was either in the ambulance or the hospital. Anyway, he told the doctors or the people that were tending him, I got a really bad taste in my mouth. And the doctors told him, yeah, that's spinal fluid. That's how bad he got punched in the face. That's... And he fell to the floor. Can you imagine being told you're tasting your spinal fluid?
Yeah.
Like, that's how bad it was. And yeah, later on, to Rudy Tomjanovich, to championship with the Houston Rockets as head coach, was the Lakers coach, went on to do great things. And Kermit Washington basically disappeared; his career was over. He basically disappeared. Tale of two guys. John Feinstein wrote a great book about it, right? But we've seen those kind of things, in the past, right? Chuck Bednarik, right, for the Eagles, hit Frank Gifford so hard in a game. He hit Frank Gifford so hard in a game that, if I'm not mistaken, there was a fan in the stadium that died of a heart attack. Okay, just a heart attack. That was his time to go, right? And so the medics took him, and he was on a table, a gurney with a sheet over him, waiting for an ambulance to come and take him away. And when the Giants players went into the tunnel and saw a body with a sheet over it, they thought it was Frank Gifford because he got hit so hard by Chuck Bednarik of the Eagles.
Yeah,
we see athletes. So imagine.
And
so
it's a famous photo, too, by the way.
Right? Yeah, exactly. So I bring those up. Because imagine if me or you were on the other end of those things.
Right.
Right?
That's what I'm saying. I mean,
like,
you know.
If I was Rudy, if my body, the way I'm built right now, nice and soft, if I got hit by Kermit Washington, I would have been dead the second I hit the floor.
The only thing that would have been okay about me is that when I hit the floor, at least there's a little cushion.
Yeah, that might be the case. Right, exactly. And if Chuck Bednarik hit me as I am right now,
been decapitated.
I would have been dead as well. Exactly.
Decapitated. Your head would have just popped right off.
Physical specimens withholding that kind of force, and you could only imagine Malice at the Palace if Jermaine O'Neal swung as hard as he could at a fan, nice 190 with a little bit of a beer gut.
Yeah.
And he gets punched in the face by Jermaine O'Neal. Done. Finished. I mean, so you can only imagine.
Maybe he doesn't die. Maybe he doesn't die, but he's drinking. He's eating food out of a straw.
He's eating food out of a straw. Exactly. Right. Just like Biggs, right? At Shawshank Redemption.
Yeah.
Not Biggs. The guys in Shawshank Redemption.
Yep.
Yeah. He never walked again. I think he's drinking his meals out of a straw. That's exactly what would have happened. But you can only imagine in that New York office what David Stern was. I would have loved to have heard David Stern's initial reaction to that. Right?
Definitely would have been able to play it on air.
I can only imagine. David Stern did have a little bit of a grammar issue sometimes. He got that angry. I miss David Stern. He's one of my favorite commissioners in all the sports. I love David Stern. All right, we'll talk Ohio State football coming up next on Wake Up Call.
You're listening to Wake Up Call on the
Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage. Home loans that fit your life. Rocket can.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, got a pretty big game coming up in the Big Ten. We got Ohio State ranked fourth by the committee going up against Michigan State, who are ranked a seventh. Ohio State at 9-1 on the season. What kind of year has it been for the Buckeyes, who seem to be rolling along now? Joey Kaufman joining us on our Progressive Guest Line from the Columbus Dispatch. Talk everything Buckeyes. How are you, Joey?
I'm not doing bad. How are you?
Good. Let's start off with the loss to Oregon. What went wrong there, and how did they react to that? And obviously responded pretty well, reeling off the wins that they've gotten.
Well, really, two big issues for them early in the year. One, their defense was not as improved as it is right now. They had a lot of trouble really defending the pass and maybe defending the run as well. I mean, they gave up 200-plus rushing yards to Oregon and Minnesota in the first two games. And that's going to be the challenge that this week, I think, is going to be, can they go against a back as good as Kenneth Walker? Because stopping the run was an issue earlier in the year. And they gave up big plays to Oregon. So the defense is, I think, much improved from where it was in the first couple weeks.
Has there been any team on their schedule since Oregon that has given them some sort of defensive challenge that Michigan State might be able to do with Kenneth Walker?
Certainly Purdue and Penn State, I think. Those are two teams that can pass the ball pretty well. Purdue with Aiden O'Connell, David Bell, that passing duo, and Penn State with Sean Clifford both can throw the ball. I think they tested Ohio State's secondary. But I don't think there's a team on the schedule that is as balanced as Michigan State is on offense, where you have Kenneth Walker, who's a Heisman Trophy candidate running back, and you have Peyton Thorne, who's a pretty good quarterback and has a good receiving combo to throw to. So, to me, that'll be the challenge for Ohio State, is it's being able to play a team that can do both, where they can't just sell out to stop the run or drop a ton of guys in the coverage. You have to really be prepared to slow down either the run or the pass.
The offensive numbers speak for themselves, but I'll let you kind of lean into it. This offense, how good is it, and what is it? What is making it roll along the way it's rolling along?
It's explosive, and early in the year, C.J. Stroud's shoulder was hurt. He had a separated shoulder the first couple of weeks, and since he's healed, he's been really good and really comfortable. The thing that they do well is, for one, Ohio State's offensive line is really good as far as not giving up a ton of pressure. So C.J. Stroud gets a lot of time to throw, and then he has three really talented receivers and Garrett Wilson and Chris Olave and Shaston Smith and Jigba. And then you have a freshman running back in Trayvon Henderson who's very explosive and can break off some big runs. He had a 57-yard touchdown against Purdue, so he's a little bit of a home run threat. So they're just a team that can break off big plays and explosive plays at really any time. They do get into a little bit of a trouble when they get into the red zone. They've kind of stalled there in some recent games. It's been a little bit of a bottleneck as they get close to the goal line, and that'll be, I think, a matchup to watch, because Michigan State, for as much as yards as they give up, they're definitely a bend but don't break defense. They can slow you down in the red zone. Michigan State's, I think, eighth on the FBS, the opponent's touchdown percentage inside the 20. So that'll be a challenge for Ohio State, is punching it in and not settling for field goals, because last few weeks they've had a little bit of an issue with that. It was better against Purdue, but it was an issue against Nebraska and Penn State.
As explosive as this is there just sort of a belief that if, you know, Michigan State's just going to have to try to control the ball and run with Kenneth Walker? Or is it explosive in a way that just utilize clock and yardage? Are they a Kansas City Chiefs thing where they can score in a minute and a half?
You're talking about Ohio State or Michigan State?
Yeah, Ohio State. Yeah, because I'm looking at the way that people would think this game would have to play out, right? If you've got Ohio State that can score all the time quickly, does Michigan State have to just try to run the ball and run the clock, or is there a different dynamic to this Ohio State's offense where, no, we score a lot, but we don't do it in like 90 seconds?
I mean, there are going to be times, I think, where Ohio State can score in 90 seconds. But I think if you're Michigan State, maybe you want them to have a 50-yard run. They get stopped at the 19-yard line. And see, you can slow them down there and keep them to a field goal. So that's the thing where Michigan State can help themselves out, is forcing them into some threes instead of some sevens, because that's a big reason why Penn State and Nebraska were so close in those games where it was 9 points. But I think certainly ball control would help Michigan State when they're on offense. Michigan or Minnesota, when they played Ohio State pretty close in game one, they were able to really milk clock when they had Mo Ibrahim healthy and really eat up yards. They didn't always capitalize on that. But if you're a team playing Ohio State, certainly if you can have some long, long drives that keep their offense on the field, the key will be then for Michigan State. You have to then capitalize on those, because Minnesota did a good job of holding on to the ball, but they didn't really finish some of those situations.
Yeah, I was kind of leaning towards this next idea. Was there anything about the way maybe Minnesota was playing them or the way Oregon beat them that Ohio State is still vulnerable towards, even though we've got more and more games under their belt?
One way that I think Ohio State is maybe vulnerable is they don't have really that elite safety that they've had in past years. They don't have, I don't think, a guy like Jordan Fuller that they had in 2019 or even Josh Proctor earlier this season. I think that's maybe a weakness in that the middle of the field. So I think a team like, I mean, Penn State showed it with Sean Clifford. They were able to pick some spots in coverage to hit, and Purdue was able to get some passing yards. So They have some nice corners. Denzel Burke's a freshman who's really come along this year, and Seven Banks, who is expected to be a start at the start of the year, is a little healthier. Cam Brown's been a good corner, but I think Stacey's the spot where they're still vulnerable. Where they're better than they were, I think, in game one, game two on defense is Matt Barnes has settled into a play caller and done a nice job of simplifying things. And they've really settled into more of a consistent rotation at linebacker. They're starting some different guys than they were early in the year. Steel Chambers, who's a converted running back, played well. He's started for the first time last week. And Cody Simon, who was just a second-year guy early in the year. So they've gotten a little more of a solidified rotation at linebacker. So I think it's where they've maybe kind of found their groove a little bit since Minnesota, Oregon.
Let's talk about C.J. Stroud. For a lot of people who are concentrating more on their regions and their college football areas, but have seen from a distance what Ohio State is doing, what Stroud is doing, what makes him so special, what makes him so extraordinary?
He's got a good arm, and he can throw the ball in some tight windows. For people who have watched Ohio State over the last couple of years, he's a little more Dwayne Haskins than Justin Fields. He's not a guy who's going to roll outside the pocket and scramble or roll outside the pocket and throw on the run. He's much more comfortable in a contained space, setting his feet and throwing. But when he does do that, he throws a really nice ball. He can put the ball in some tight spots. And that's what Ohio State needs him to do is really push the ball vertically, get it to their receivers. They don't need him to really be scrambling and doing all that. They have a lot of playmakers for him to distribute the ball to. It's been a little bit of a source, a talking point in Columbus is why doesn't C.J. Stroud run the ball as much as Justin Fields? Well, he's not the runner that Justin Fields was, and when you have Olave and Wilson and Jack Smith and Jigba, why not get it to those guys?
Those are next-level receivers. I mean, they're, right? So go with that. Do they get in their own way? I mean, again, the numbers speak for themselves. They've been rolling along and winning by double digits, but do they ever get in their own way? Has been there costly penalties that could have hurt them? Do they turn the ball over? How have they done with those little things that could keep an opponent in the game a little longer than maybe they should?
You haven't really seen them turn the ball over. That's been, an area where C.J. Stroud's been pretty good at as a freshman, is not having those costly picks. He's largely made good decisions. They've had some issues with penalties a little bit more in recent weeks. When they played Penn State, the offensive line had 5 false starts, and they had 2 snap infractions, which certainly gave them some drives and didn't allow them to capitalize. They do, I don't know if you'd say get in their own way, but sometimes they do make it difficult on themselves or maybe try to get too cute. They will pass the ball a lot. And I think people watch some of the games that they had against Penn State and Nebraska where they maybe got into the red zone and they weren't having success on the ground. So they ended up passing the ball. They would probably have helped themselves out a little more. Their offensive line could have gotten a little better push and you didn't really feel you had to go to the air. You could just hand it off to your running back and get some tough yardage. So that was, I think, an issue that popped up a couple of weeks ago. They didn't really need it last week. They just threw the ball over the yard, and Purdue could do anything to stop it. And that very well could be the case against Michigan State, because Ohio State's greatest strength is their passing game, and Sparty's biggest weakness is their pass defense.
How would you rate the Big Ten, in not just in terms of the top teams, but where you get your most battles, sort of those middle teams that can give you a little bit of a game? You might beat them, but they give you a little bit of a game. How's the middle of this conference?
I think that's where the Big Ten might be a strongest. It's a pretty deep conference. Purdue, I think, is a good example of that, where they're maybe more the middle team, middle tier in the league, but they're a team that was in first place the Big Ten West a week ago, and they were in the college football playoff rankings, and they've beaten two of the best teams in Iowa and Michigan State. So that's where I think the league is strong, is it's pretty deep. And you look at the Big Ten East, you have Michigan, Penn State, Michigan State, Ohio State. I mean, those are three of those teams have been in the top 10, and Penn State's been in the top 25 for part of this year as well. So it's a deep league, and it's also got playoff contenders.
If you don't mind me asking this question, this is going to go off the grid a little bit. Just full disclosure, I married into a Florida Gator family. My son goes to school there, so I'm very, very close to that program. And I know how that fan base, or a lot of fan base, felt about Urban Meyer leaving and going to Ohio State later on, saying he had health problems. Is that situation similar in Columbus? How do they view Urban Meyer, who left, sort of had some problems when he left, and now is a coach at Jacksonville?
I think it's mixed. I think you probably would have half the fan base who has largely been, I think, thankful that Urban Meyer came in here. But look, I think if you look at the last 20 years of Ohio State football, I think Jim Tressel helped Ohio State dominate on a local level. They started beating Michigan routinely, and they started recruiting Ohio really well, where they pretty much got every top kid in the state to come to Ohio State. And then Urban Meyer turned them into a national program, a program that could compete for the playoff, that could recruit nationally. He really laid a foundation that Ryan Day has continued. And I think Buckeye fans, most of them, appreciate that and know what he did. I think most fans then also recognize that it was probably time. I mean, he did not have a very fun exit from Ohio State with the Zach Smith scandal. And I think even with the latest issues in Jacksonville and all that controversy, I think they like that Ryan Day and this program is a lot more quiet, or a lot quieter off the field. You don't have the same level of drama of an Urban Meyer program. So it feels like 7 years was kind of like the right time for both parties, I think is how most fans probably look at it now. But it's a lot easier to feel good and leave with Urban Meyer on good terms, considering the success that Ryan Day's had. He's lost three games in 3 years. So I think that's if the program were to have fallen apart, if this was a situation where Ryan Day was like Jimmy Lake and takes the torch from his predecessor and things fall apart, maybe you don't look back on Urban's exit so fondly, but because the transition has gone so well, I think ultimately most fans appreciate the Meyer years and don't have too many hard feelings.
Yeah, you got a good point, because the Florida situation was, you know, Will Muschamp, Jim McElhane, Dan Mullen, all have had problems, all have had issues, all have taken the program further back. Ohio State didn't take a step back. They keep rolling along and still get nationally ranked. So that's a very good different perspective of those two exits. Hey, I appreciate it, Justin. Thank you so much for joining us. Really appreciate your time.
Hey, great talking with you. Thanks for having me.
Okay, sorry, Joey Kaufman again of the Columbus Dispatch, talking Ohio State football as we continue along. It's Wake Up Call on Sports Map Radio.
This is Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, as we continue along, thanks for joining us. It is coming up at hour number three. We are going to go over the NFL games. We're going to tell you what we like and what we don't like heading into this weekend. And then Josh Klein is going to join us. We're going to talk Carolina Panthers. When is the Cam Newton Part 2 story going to start? I mean, you got a little appetizer, right, with those two goal line touchdowns. But when is he going to, like, take over? Or is it P.J. Walker's
start him this weekend?
Happen? Yeah, like, what are we doing in Carolina?
Why not?
But I think I want to do a larger look at this Panther team. Like, you know, what was it like before when you kind of felt like you had to move on from Cam Newton? And obviously he comes in a lot cheaper, but still it's a second act for a franchise play. You just don't see that in the NFL. You don't see a guy get released, go spend 1 year somewhere else, and then come back on a cheaper deal.
Yeah.
When he was not only the guy, he's the best player the franchise has ever had.
Yep.
Like, you just don't see that at all. Unquestionable. Thanks to Joey Kaufman at the Columbus Dispatch. I thought his answer was really good about the Urban Meyer situation. And to me, That might be a question that, like, I only care about because I just find the Urban Meyer saga really fascinating. But he's right that because Ryan Day has kept the ship afloat and they're really good, I think you can look back at Urban Meyer and be more appreciative. I think some of the angst at Florida Gator fans, because I'll be honest with you, he didn't leave the cupboard clean. Like when he left Florida, it was a mess. And he knew looking around, he's like, my players were getting in trouble with the law. I'm losing recruiting battles. I'm getting the hell out of here.
That one affected the players in the university.
Yeah.
Where the Ryan, or not the Ryan Day, what was the guy's name?
Zach Smith.
That was really him. It didn't really have anything to do with the kids.
Right.
It wasn't like when Jim Tressel. Yeah, I'm messing up all my names.
That's all right.
It wasn't like when Tressel left.
Yeah, and Tressel left over controversy that shouldn't have been a controversy. I've been on his side of that forever. Right, it wouldn't have been anymore. But I still cannot believe. And I remember I was in Denver at the time, and I remember Joel Klatt was doing some local shows with us. He's obviously gone on to college football fame and glory. But I remember saying, I cannot believe this sport, that this guy's legacy is that he covered up tattoos for merchandise.
Yeah.
Like, that's his legacy? Like, everything Jim Tressel did. He beat Miami, for crying out loud, to win a national championship. And that's how we're going to remember Jim Tressel, is that he covered up. He just wanted a simple, boring, should have been really boring story of his athletes getting tattoos for merchandise.
Yeah.
Which is not even, it didn't even get money. And it wasn't, it's not even criminal. It's just against the rules. He covered it up, and he lost one of the great jobs of college football that he deserved to have. I was like, I can't believe your sport allows this to happen, man. It should never happen. That's the Ohio State.